You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
High five! I wasn't planning on doing an episode today since it's a back-to-back for the Rockets, Wednesday night at home against Washington, tonight, Thursday night in Miami. But when you win your fifth consecutive game and you break a long-held NBA record for three-pointers in the process, yeah, I think that warrants an episode. So with that, welcome in to a special Thursday morning episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben DuBose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. As mentioned off the top, it was a big win for the Rockets, their fifth consecutive, improving them to 16-14 on the season. Now finally back on the inside of the Western Conference playoff picture, more importantly, just one game back in the loss column of a top four seed and home court advantage in the first round with 50 games, 50 plus that is, still left to go. So the Rockets, they seem to be rounding into form at a very good time. The schedule is going to get stiffer in the coming days. Miami tonight on the road, then home for San Antonio and Oklahoma City. So the competition will definitely get better than what we saw from the Washington Wizards and the homecoming of Trevor Ariza on Wednesday night. But when you win the way the Rockets did, yes, it's a cause for celebration. The 136-118 victory, an 18-point margin, that's big. But to see them do it with a sustainable route, not just James Harden, who did lead the way with 35 points and 9 assists, but getting the help that he hadn't gotten enough of late from the likes of Chris Paul and Eric Gordon, it's a feel-good win for the Rockets because you can see their roadmap to success with this current group. So that's what we're going to be talking about on today's show, and then we'll finish up on the back half with a few comments about the aforementioned Trevor Ariza, his return to Houston, and what we can take, not just from the offseason, but especially the in-season trade of him from Phoenix to Washington and what it tells us about the Rockets' priorities, both now and over the next couple of months, on the trade market. But as stated, we can talk about the trade stuff later. To start off, let's talk about the game, the fun stuff, because you score 136 points when you're able to do that, and you set an NBA record with 26 made three-pointers, including the dagger in the final minute from Michael Carter Williams, not a dagger in the traditional sense, but it felt like the Rockets, for so many years, have been on the verge of setting this mark. You go back 5 years ago when the Warriors were coached by Mark Jackson, and he wouldn't let the Rockets do it, intentionally fouling to prevent them from doing it against his team. Thankfully, Scott Brooks did not seem to have that same level of immaturity. The Rockets kept firing away, and finally, on what was possibly their last attempt of the game, Michael Carter Williams, of all people, set the mark. So when you have Michael Carter-Williams make a three in any game, that probably says it's a good game for you because MCW rarely plays unless it's not competitive. Unfortunately, this one was in a good way for the Rockets. But really, the contributions up and down the roster. James Harden, 6 of 11. Chris Paul, 5 of 9. Eric Gordon, 4 of 9. PJ Tucker, 3 of 4. Houston collectively as a team, 26 of 55, nearly 50% from behind the arc. So they did it all on high volume. Kudos to the Rockets. This was a brilliant game. And I'm going to lead in our initial segment, not so much with James Harden, because to some extent, he's the reigning MVP. We've been talking about his exploits over this five-game winning streak when he's averaging basically close to 48-8 per game. We've talked about him a lot. And certainly, Wednesday against the Wizards was another big game for him. As mentioned, 35-9, did it on 10 of 18 from the field, 6 of 11 from 3, 9 of 9 from behind the arc. One thing I really enjoyed was that he only turned the ball over twice. So when you consider the pace at which the Rockets played, when you score 136 points and the game just a breakneck pace with the level of athletes on the floor, John Wall, Bradley Beal for Washington, you would expect a lot of turnovers just from the frenetic pace of things. But Harden only had two. Chris Paul had three. So when that backcourt, and let's throw in Eric Gordon in that group for good measure, he had just one. So between CP3, Harden, and Gordon, just to combine six turnovers, that sets the right tone. And James has been hot really from everywhere on his drives, from behind the arc, from the free throw line, you name it. And James continued that in Wednesday night's win. But as we mentioned after Monday's game, the 102-97 win over Utah, in which the Rockets had to get every ounce out of James Harden, those 47 points, to get past a Utah team that had a very stingy defense. Despite struggling on the offensive end, you could see that defensively they were a bear. And I think that was reflected in the Jazz beating the Golden State Warriors on Wednesday night. By the way, that puts the margin just at 3 games in the loss column somehow between the Rockets and Golden State. But what I think that reflects in a bigger picture is that win over Utah. I know what the record is now, just 15-17, but it was more quality than what it might seem at the time when you just look at the standings and where Houston and Utah are. That Utah team was locked in, especially defensively. They had a great game plan, and it took James Harden really having one of the best games of his career. Statistically, it might not seem that way, because even with 47 points, he's had so many over his storied 10-plus year NBA career, including the last 6-plus here in Houston. But when you consider who he was playing against, the game plan, it was really strong. And the Rockets needed every bit of that just to scrape by in a game that was a one-possession ball game in the final minute. It was a 2-point game, and if James Harden hadn't hit that step back with 15 seconds left, the Jazz would have had the ball with a shot to tie or even win. So for the Rockets to get that win against the Jazz, it reflects how dominant James Harden was. But the concern, and as I said on our postgame show, it's kind of a glass half full, glass half empty, is that it took a god version of James Harden to get you that W. That's not really a sustainable model, because as great as James Harden is, that was probably one of the top 5 performances of his career, in my opinion. That's not something you can expect every night. For the Rockets to get where they need to go, they need to get more help from the supporting cast. Clint Capella struggled from the field. Well, Wednesday night, he had 20-12 on 9-13 shooting. But the bigger thing, Chris Paul and Eric Gordon, for the season as a whole, those are the two guys that have lagged their expected production by the most on this entire team. They're expected to be the number 2 and number 3 playmakers. Chris Paul, his last 4 games entering Wednesday, were all 30% or below from the field. Eric Gordon, for the season, was at 37% from the field, 29% from behind the arc. Well, Chris Paul on Wednesday, 21-8, 7-11 from the field, 5-9 from behind the arc. Eric Gordon, what a fun night for him. 16 points, 6-12 shooting, 4-9 from behind the arc. So between the two of them, that's 13-23 from the field, above 50%, and 9-18 from 3, exactly 50%. Yeah, I think that will play, and combined, 37 points and 11 assists between those two guys, Chris Paul and Eric Gordon. We also shouldn't forget P.J. Tucker. He scored 11 points, but what's a big deal with P.J. is his efficiency, 3-4 from behind the arc. In his last 3 games, he's shooting 11-20 from distance. That's 55%, simply astounding. And one of the best things, the Rockets out-rebounded Washington. We know Houston all season long has had issues on the glass, especially defensively. Well, the Rockets won the rebounding battle 41-31 on Wednesday, and PJ had 11. We know PJ's undersized. That's a big part. When you start a guy that's just 6'6" and now 33 years old at the 4 spot, you're probably going to have a few issues defensively, especially when you switch the way the Rockets do. Well, PJ stepping up, battling his way through a strained groin, not that we would expect anything different. He's one of the toughest guys in the league. But while playing hurt, to give you 11 big rebounds, that's important. And the Rockets winning this game fairly comfortably. No one had to play more than 35 minutes, and that's a big deal because they are going to be playing on the second half of a back-to-back with a lot of travel in between, going from Houston Wednesday night to Miami Thursday night. But with PJ, it's certainly not that you take him for granted, but as mentioned, he had been shooting well the last 2 games. The concern were the number 2, the number 3 playmakers, the guys who were supposed to do the heavy lifting outside of James Harden, especially the minutes that he's out of the game. And by the way, James Harden against the Jazz played 41 minutes, barely sat in the second half. Wednesday against the Wizards, he played 34 minutes and got plenty of time off. Well, because the Rockets didn't fall apart when he exited the game, because Chris Paul and Eric Gordon did what they are expected to do. And for the season as a whole, they are the two guys that have far and away lagged expectations by the most significant amount. And if they get going, then yes, these Rockets can be very, very good. Now, I think one game is far too premature to say that they're back. I asked Mike D'Antoni before the game about Chris Paul's struggles in particular, shooting 30% or below for 4 straight games. He played it off. Well, he joked at first, saying maybe he needs to shoot that poorly because they won all of those games. But then he just said it's the normal cycle of players. You could tell that he wasn't really sweating it. Well, his patience was rewarded Wednesday night. Of course, one game doesn't mean that the trend throughout really the first 30 games of the season is now counteracted. It's going to take a lot more. But what I think this game shows you is that if these two get it going, this is the roadmap. As good of a win as Monday was against a quality Utah team, a better team than the Wizards, there was always that nagging thing in the pit of your stomach that, look, it took just a god game from James Harden to get you that W. This one, even though it was against a lesser opponent, the foundation was more sustainable. If you get anything close to this level of efficiency from Chris Paul and Eric Gordon, and then you combine it with James Harden, to me, this is where you see a real path for the Rockets. We'll expand more on that in segment two, but this is a sustainable model. No, they're not going to set an NBA record with 26 made threes every night. They were hot. The Wizards' defense is not very good. There's lots of extenuating circumstances. Washington was on night two of a back-to-back, night one in Atlanta, then night two in Houston. Hopefully the Rockets don't fall victim to the same tired legs tonight in Miami. Stay tuned. But if James Harden has this level of support, the support that Daryl Morey envisioned when he put together this roster from Chris Paul and Eric Gordon as the secondary playmakers after James as the MVP, this is the roadmap for Houston moving forward. This is a win, the fifth straight for the Rockets, that should have you feeling pretty good that this team, I don't know if they're back to the 65-win form they were in a year ago, but they're at least back to being a good to very good basketball team. Jumping back into the program, Thursday's abbreviated episode breaking down the 136-118 win the Rockets posted over the Wizards on Wednesday night at Toyota Center. They're currently getting ready in Miami, hopefully catching up on a bit of sleep after a long plane flight. Didn't get in until after 2 a.m. Eastern time before the Rockets play the Miami Heat, a 7 p.m. local time tip here in Houston, although 8 p.m. out there in Miami. Will be nationally televised on TNT. We spent much of the first segment discussing the importance of Chris Paul and Eric Gordon, two guys that have far lagged their expected standards of efficiency throughout the first 30 games of the year. The Rockets, having won their fifth straight, they're now 16-14. And of course, those two in particular are the linchpins. They're the variables. While James Harden has carried them through this current five-game winning streak, by and large, there have been games, especially Monday in Utah, where you have the nagging feeling that even though you're winning, it may not be sustainable over the long haul because James isn't capable of that on every single night. This is more sustainable, and should it continue, and again, they're not going to be this hot, you're not going to set an NBA record, which the Rockets did Wednesday with 26 made threes on any sort of regular basis, even though Eric Gordon did say after the game that he believes they'll hit 30 at some point, be it this year, next year, means this era of the Rockets, especially with the freedom under Mike D'Antoni to fire away whether they're going in or not. But if Chris and Eric give you anywhere near their expected levels of efficiency, you can see what the path is for the Rockets to be a winning team. And really, ever since ditching Carmelo Anthony, the Rockets have been far and away the league's top offense. There have been a few blips here and there, but they've been a very good offensive team for some time, and they seem to only be getting better. So the fact that they are the league's top-ranked offense, even with Chris Paul and Eric Gordon playing well below their expected standards, that tells you that if they have been this good over the past month on the offensive side, even with those two guys not playing all that well, they can be historically elite, especially now that Eric Gordon is starting and you have those three-guard lineups with CP3, James Harden, and Eric Gordon more than ever. You have an opportunity to be historically elite if these guys start playing to their expected standards. And that's probably what you're going to need if you actually want to contend this year. And the good news is, I've said a lot, there's a lot of parity in the Western Conference. Even the Warriors are 21-11. They're just three games ahead of you in the loss column. Given all their expectations, they're still not where they expect to be. So it's not as if there's a heavyweight that you can't match up with. There's a lot of parity, there's a lot of good teams. At least at the moment, there are not a lot of great teams. So the bar, while high, it's not off the charts. It is attainable for the Rockets, and we know there are issues on the defensive end of the floor. And Wednesday night, they gave up 118 points. Now, some of it, the pace of the game was very fast, but they're not going to go from a bottom five, bottom 10 defensive team the way they've been for a lot of this season to the borderline top five unit they were a year ago. That's not reasonable. And even if they were able to address the personnel. We'll talk more about the Trevor Ariza side of things in segment three. Even if somehow they did bring in more defense, I don't know if it's reasonable to get back to where they were a year ago, because I think, as we mentioned on Tuesday's show, a big part of their success was catching teams by surprise. No one had ever switched to the extent defensively the Rockets did a year ago. Well, now teams are adjusting to that adjustment. So the Rockets, they are a fairly undersized team, especially with P.J. Tucker, 6'6" at the four, Eric Gordon, 6'4" at the three. There are just certain inherent limitations. James Harden, with the workload he has to take on offensively, it's not like you can expect him to be a dynamite defender. He's not the quickest guy laterally anyway. Chris Paul is 33 years old. There's just not a roadmap to where the Rockets, you can expect them to be an elite defensive team. You shouldn't expect them to be as bad as they've been. You can't just say that, oh, it's okay if you're one of the worst defenses in the NBA. No, they can be better than that just by sheer effort. But I think best case, you're probably looking at a middle of the pack, maybe slightly better than that defense for this season. It's just the roster composition, it's hard to overcome that. Now, one minor thing we should acknowledge, since the hashtag greenhouse effect got going and in Wednesday night's win, Gerald Green had 12 points, 4 of 7 from behind the arc. Daniel House had 9. Gerald was plus 16. House was plus 10. Their energy off the bench, their ability to get out in transition has helped with the transition defense that was really plaguing the Rockets earlier this year. Not that it's a strength now by any means, but with that adjustment, getting guys that are more comfortable running the floor, pushing the pace a little bit, that's helped make that transition defense, while not a strength, not the enormous weakness it was early in the year. So it's one of the little things they can do, but you add up all these little things. Can you get back to being a middle of the pack, maybe slightly better than that defense? Yes, but the personnel is probably not there, especially from a rebounding perspective, to expect you to be a top five unit in the vein of Utah, Boston, even Golden State when they're right. The Rockets just don't have the personnel. But that doesn't mean the Rockets can't contend, especially in a Western Conference that, while there are a lot of good teams, there maybe aren't the amount of great teams, even with the Warriors not quite reaching the bar we expected. And yes, there's still a long way to go. There's plenty of time for this to change. But right now, there's not this astronomically high bar that the Rockets can't get to. And even with the defense at, you know, best case, a mediocre level, if the Rockets' offense is historically elite enough, you can win with that. And the model I see, it's not last season's Rockets, it's actually the first season of Mike D'Antoni's Rockets in Houston. That 2016-2017 season when the Rockets overachieved expectations, won 55 games, they were a middle-of-the-pack defensive team, but their offense was out of this world. They bombed away from outside. Now, these Rockets aren't playing quite as fast as those Rockets. When now you have Chris Paul, certainly that's going to affect the pace. Even though Chris is playing faster these days by his standards, it's certainly not the same as when James Harden was the only playmaker, and the Rockets back then truly were trying to get back to the 7 seconds or less Suns days of Mike D'Antoni. It's not like that. But I think what the parallel is that Rockets team, at times, they looked like, other than the Warriors, the best team in the NBA. The first 40 games, they went 31-9. Now, they never quite recaptured that form. The integration of Lou Williams after the trade deadline never went as smoothly as they envisioned. And Clint Capela, who was just in year three, only his second year really as a rotation piece, his first as a starter, he wasn't quite where he is now in terms of his development. We saw him shy away in the playoffs against Steven Adams. But even with that, the Rockets beat a good Thunder team led by the MVP, I'm rolling my eyes as I say that, Russell Westbrook. And then they won big in game one in San Antonio. That's a 61-win Spurs team in the second round. And they were tied after four games, and game five was there for the taking. And yes, we all know how that ended. But realistically, when you look back at that season as a whole from a macro standpoint, look, the Spurs were a 60-plus win juggernaut. And the Rockets were right there with them. I think the absence of Nene turned that series when he got hurt in game four with the strained groin. And more than that, the Rockets offense, especially late in half-court situations, got too predictable with James Harden as the only playmaker. That's where Chris Paul, especially hashtag playoff CP3, comes in to relieve a little bit of that burden. So while the Rockets aren't quite as fast-paced as they were 2 years ago, they do have Chris Paul now, who can do things in the half court that no one at that time could. So while you can see that there are certain overall similarities, mediocre defense, great offense, there are some things that, in my opinion, make this team a little more better suited for playoff success based on the roster composition, and of course having another Hall of Fame type player in Chris Paul, who over the balance of the regular season may not be able to give you his best on every single night based on the aging curve, but when it's winning time, and that's what the playoffs are, hashtag playoff CP3, you add that to basically what the Rockets had stylistically from 2 years ago, and yeah, you might really have something, because I know that season ended on a very sour note, but when you look back at the season as a whole, they were really, really good, and when they were clicking, there were times that you believe that he, even against the Warriors, we talked about just shoot so many threes, increase the variance, and you know, if you're hot, and the Rockets were on Wednesday with 26 made three-pointers, even the Warriors might not be able to catch up with you. In summary, the real takeaway for me is that you can start to see what the roadmap is if the Rockets are going to be a contender or even quasi-contender with this team. Because defensively, there are issues. It goes up and down the roster. There's a ton of reasons for them. No, it's not just Trevor Ariza and Luke Bamute, but you're not going to flip from a bottom five team to a really good one by the end of the season defensively. I don't think that's going to happen. But the upside is that the Rockets for the past month have been the league's best offensive team far and away, and they have not even gotten anywhere near standard levels of production from Chris Paul and Eric Gordon, the guys who are supposed to be, other than James Harden, the best playmakers on the team. So what they showed you 2 years ago is that even if your defense is mediocre, if your offense is good enough to where they're number one or two in the league, you can still have a chance. And that was a Rockets team without Chris Paul. Now, if you have a Rockets team that for the last month has been the league's best offense, and you get Chris Paul back to where he expects to be, maybe they can be historically elite enough on offense to where they can overcome some of this defense. It's a lot to ask, and it's not to say the defensive side of the ball is irrelevant. They have work to do just to get to mediocre, but if they can do that on the defensive end, get back to the middle of the pack, and you can take an offense that's already been the league's best over the past month, and then add in what you expected to get from Chris Paul and Eric Gordon, maybe the offense can become historically elite enough to where it gives you a chance in spite of a defense that at this point it's not really reasonable to expect it to magically become good. It's a lot to ask, but if Chris Paul and Eric Gordon give you anywhere near the level of impact they did on Wednesday, there's at least a path. And for a Rockets team that before this five-game winning streak was 11-14 and seemingly lifeless, at this point I will gladly take a path, and we'll talk more about the specifics of it, of course, as we move along throughout the season. Final thoughts, I want to reflect a bit on Trevor Ariza. It was his first return to Toyota Center since leaving Houston in the offseason, signed with Phoenix, traded to Washington last weekend. The Rockets did a very well-done tribute video for him, which is on their Twitter feed, at Houston Rockets. You can also follow it on my Twitter feed, at Ben Dubose, and see the crowd's reaction. The crowd, after watching that minute-and-a-half video, gave him a nice ovation. You could see Trevor acknowledge them, wave, touched his heart. It meant a lot to him. And I was proud of Rockets fans for giving him that ovation, because it's a little thing, but when players are deciding if they're torn between multiple teams that they could go to, be it a trade or a potential free agency situation, then yeah, an intelligent fan base that respects its players for working hard, that can make a little bit of a difference. And kudos to the Rockets fans. I thought they represented themselves very well in Trevor Ariza's return. And to his credit, Trevor did play pretty well. Now, he was just 1 of 8 from behind the arc, but overall, 15 points, 6 rebounds, 7 of 15 shooting in 36 minutes. Tip your hat, he's a good player, and the Rockets, even winning by 18, while they gave up 118 points, they remain a bottom 10, bottom 5 defense by most metrics. Trevor Ariza, even at 33 years old, still a quality defensive player. And yeah, it would be nice if you could get someone like that on the Rockets, and I think that's part of, you know, the 3-and-D wing, something that Daryl Morey is definitely looking at, especially with James Ennis having recurring hamstring issues. Now, I'm not going to relitigate what happened in the offseason. What's done is done. There's a number of plausible theories there. If y'all want to have a beer with me, I'm more than happy to talk about some of them, but at this point, those are fairly irrelevant. What matters for the Rockets is what they can do to bolster the roster moving forward, and so to me, the trade of Ariza to Washington, the Rockets not getting involved. Now, part of that, the Wizards actually gave up a pretty talented young player in Kelly Oubre. I don't think the Rockets could match that unless they gave up multiple future first-round picks, and that is just not really tenable for a number of reasons. But I do think there are some lessons that we can take from the Rockets not really being all that actively involved, even though he fits a position of need. And I saw many of you on Twitter when the original Ariza to the Wizards deal fell apart Friday night. There was a big segment of the Rockets fan base that was wondering, can Houston put something together after that to get him to Houston? And the reason I don't think that they could, and I do think it has implications beyond just Trevor, is because of the salary math it would have taken for the Rockets to make that work. With Ariza making $15 million, the only way the Rockets financially could send out enough salary other than breaking into their core would be sending Brandon Knight. You'd probably have to involve a third team, because I'm not so sure the Suns would have wanted Knight back, or even in these three-team scenarios where maybe the Rockets get Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Hypothetically, that was thrown out from the Lakers. Well, the Lakers wouldn't want to take Knight's extra year of salary, not expiring until 2020, so you'd have to involve a third team in many of these scenarios, who would then send an expiring to Phoenix or whoever it is in the trade that you're hypothetically proposing. And of course, as I've said before, with there being so much parity around the league, that's harder than you might think, because there aren't really that many sellers right now. But the reason I don't think the Rockets were that actively involved with Ariza, despite him seeming to have a fit and definitely being at a relative position of need for the Rockets, it's not just Brandon Knight, the basketball player, that you would have been giving up. And that's not to totally discount that. As Mike D'Antoni has said, Brandon Knight earlier in his career was an all-star level player, basically averaging 20 points, 5 assists per game. He's now just 26 years old. I know it's baby steps. There's a long way to go after missing over a year and a half with a torn ACL in his knee and then a subsequent infection. But there is upside to Brandon Knight, the basketball player. And we talked about that the other night. If the Rockets finally have a backup point guard that they can trust, a fourth guard, then that could have a ton of positive implications for the team going forward. He's not nearly there yet, but it's a process, and it could pay off, and there's dividends just to keeping Brandon Knight the basketball player. But beyond Knight the player, there's also Knight the contract, because with his deal not expiring until 2020, there is going to come a point, probably as soon as this summer, when that expiring contract isn't seen as a negative asset, but a neutral or maybe even slightly positive one, because teams can use it to clear salary cap room. And because he's on the books, the Rockets can use him to match salary in potential trades, not just at the trade deadline, which he can be aggregated. Of course, if the Rockets would have made a deal last weekend for Ariza, they wouldn't be able to trade him in a package because the aggregation deadline had passed. 60 days would be after the trade deadline. So you'd be able to package Knight at the deadline or next summer. With Ariza, you couldn't package him at the deadline, and next summer he'd be a free agent, so you wouldn't really have control. Whereas with Knight, that contract is valuable because it is a piece, and right now it might be seen as a negative asset, but down the road it could be a neutral or slightly positive one that you could make a lot of hypothetical deals work with. And beyond just Knight the player and the contract, there's also a couple of other minor factors that should be considered. Right now, it's the draft capital. Because he is seen as a negative asset with nearly 2 years left on his contract, you'd have to give up probably a future first-round pick to get a team to give up an expiring for Brandon Knight. Maybe you could try for 2 or 3 seconds, but more than likely, you'd have to give up a first, a very similar deal to the George Hill thing involving the Cavs and the Bucks from earlier this month at the aggregation deadline. So there's Brandon Knight, the player, whatever upside there is there. There's Brandon Knight, the contract, the usefulness of that to match salary. There's the value of future draft compensation, which if you traded Knight now, you would have to give up in order to get the expiring to make one of these deals work. And finally, there's Houston's position on the buyout market. Because right now, if there's a good 3-and-D wing, let's say Damari Carroll that's out there, the Rockets are set up pretty well to get them because they've got the most money, they've got nearly all of their mid-level exception, and they've got a clear role that they can step into to where they'll get playing time. Whereas if you trade for Trevor Ariza or any other 3-and-D wing, it's probably going to cost you on the buyout market because those guys won't have a clear path to minutes in Houston, so they're going to be more likely to go elsewhere. All of these are little things, but when you add them together, they can be significant. And is Trevor Ariza on a 1-year expiring deal? I don't think the Rockets would be that optimistic about re-signing him in the summer, given that they just went through this dance a few months back and it didn't end well. Is that worth giving up all 4 of those things? I don't think so. Especially because when you get to the deadline, there's a case for where maybe some of those aren't as severe, the consequences. For example, if Brandon Knight shows you something on the basketball floor, maybe his contract is not seen as so negative, and you wouldn't have to give up as much future draft compensation to make one of these deals work. That's a possibility. Also, because it'd be closer to just 1 year left, maybe the amount of money he's owed through 2020 is not as staggering in February, as it is in December. Or maybe it makes more sense because you get to February and you realize, hey, the buyout market just isn't going to be very good. And at that point, that consideration, potentially being well-positioned to land a 3-and-D wing on the buyout market, well, that becomes irrelevant because it's obvious that no one good is going to get bought out. That's another possibility. So things could change by February and perhaps even Ariza. Keep in mind that even though the Wizards landed him, I don't think it's a given he finishes the year now, there. Conceivably, he could be bought out, although I think that's unlikely. The Lakers still loom as a suitor, and they could try and put that same deal back together in February. Ariza can't be aggregated, but he can be traded. And with the Wizards at 12 and 20, if things go off the rails there, it's entirely possible they could look to break up that team. I think they'd love for Ariza to help stabilize the clubhouse, but if it doesn't work, I don't know why a 33-year-old Trevor Ariza really fits there if the Wizards start tanking the way they were earlier in the year. But more than likely, it wouldn't be Ariza. It'd be someone else, perhaps a 3-and-D wing. Ariza's just one example, and he was dealt this past weekend. But that's why, in my opinion, it's not really feasible for the Rockets to do a night deal now for that kind of help. Of course, they want to be able to swing for bigger fish later. That's where the aggregation deadline comes into play. But beyond that, the timing just doesn't make sense because there's no player that's worth giving up all of those four things. Whatever upside there is to knight the player, then knight the contract, his matching potential, not just at the deadline, but in the upcoming summer. Ideally, you know, if you were to get a player like, say, Kent Bazemore or Courtney Lee that had 2 years left in his current deal, like Knight, then yeah, that might work because you'd have that player's salary to match deals with in the summer the same way you would with Knight. And maybe also you're not having to give up as much draft capital for that team taking on Knight because they're not giving up and expiring. Maybe that makes more sense. So it could be going for a player with multiple years left on their current deal as opposed to one. It could be hoping that Knight plays better and thus reduces the concerns, what you would have to give up in terms of draft capital. Maybe the buyout market isn't as potentially loaded as we think it might be at the moment. All of these are possibilities. I just think it's important to lay out, especially with Ariza returning to Houston and, of course, relitigating not just the offseason, but him being traded this past week. And, of course, a lot of players on expiring deals get dealt because a lot of teams, in theory, you'd love to be able to get something rather than lose an asset for zero compensation in the summer when they just leave for another team. So, to me, I know there's a lot of angst among a certain segment of Rockets Twitter. Why aren't you making a deal yet when this team, even winning 5 in a row, 16-14, they're still well below expectations? It needs to make sense. And that's why at this particular time, I think a lot of these deals, while you might can look at it and say, well, would Trevor Ariza make you a better team right now? Probably. But it's not just about your roster in December. It's about optimizing it for April. It's about optimizing it for next year. And given that Brandon Knight is really the only way you can make the math work on a lot of these deals, to me, now is probably not the right time to make that move. January or February, it might be. But for now, it's a little too risky. And the good news is that if the Rockets are hot, which they seem to be, 5 wins in a row, then it could buy them time, at least a few more weeks. And then we could pick up this discussion in January and February, and hopefully we'll have a better sense of where the team is, where the buyout market is, and also where Brandon Knight is in his recovery. Anyway, with that, I think we can wrap up our abbreviated, well, went a little bit longer than I planned. When you guys know me, when I start going on trades, it can go for a while. I find them fascinating, and Daryl Morey, even amongst GMs, which in the NBA are as interesting as it gets, Daryl Morey is certainly at the top of the list when it comes to intriguing names when you look at his philosophies and the factors that he may be considering. Anyway, though, I know we have a game just a few hours away now, so we'll break it here because we're not too far away from another episode right here at Locked On Rockets. If you want more content before our next show, the best place to get it, of course, is on Twitter, including real-time analysis of tonight's game. I'm on there at Ben Dubose. That's simply my name. The show is on there at Locked On Rockets. And also, you should follow Locked On NBA Net. That's the curated feed for the Locked On Podcast Network. Not just myself, I am on there, but also experts from across the other teams, including those with Locked On Heat. So if you want to get perspective from the other teams of what they think when they're following the Rockets, it's another TNT exclusive, so there aren't that many other games going on in the association tonight. Then yeah, check out our curated feed, Locked On NBA Net on Twitter, and also that same handle on Instagram. Also, subscribe to us if you have not already, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify. Also, if you use Voice Assistant, play podcasts Locked On Rockets. All those are ways that you can access our content. But if you would also subscribe, that's how we look attractive to potential advertisers. You get episodes right when they come out. We get the benefit of boosting our subscriber figures. And if you'd be kind enough to leave a 5-star review, that's how we can look really attractive and keep the business model rolling here at Locked On Rockets as the only daily podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. Once again, the happy final from Toyota Center Wednesday evening. Rockets 136, Wizards 118. Rockets set an NBA record in the process with 26 made threes. They return to action tonight in Miami. For now, enjoy the win and come back soon. We'll have more game analysis right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily discussion of Houston Rockets basketball.